listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back. Nicole Sandler with you here on Air America. The number is 866-303-2270. And for this hour, we're going to talk about something that many of us take for granted. You might remember last week I interviewed Chris Anderson, who wrote the book Free. And it was about this new free economy or free-based economy. Now, I'm not talking about drugs. An economy based on free things, which has sort of burnished, which has just exploded since the growth of the Internet. The thing is, though, the Internet, there are those who want to make sure that not only is the Internet not free, but it is not equal either. And on that note, we bring in our next guest. I've spoken with Timothy Carr a number of times, and I'm always happy to have him on, because the issue of net neutrality is one that people go, well, I've heard of it, but I don't really know what it is. So there's a couple of things I want to do with you tonight, Tim. The first being to explain what net neutrality is and then why we need it, and then also talk about this bill that was introduced on Friday. So Timothy Carr, campaign director of Free Press and SaveTheInternet.com. Welcome to Air America Radio.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Thank you for staying up late with us tonight. All right, talk about what net neutrality is, because so many people have heard the term, but they really don't understand what it means.
Well, it's pretty simple, really. Net neutrality is the founding principle of the Internet. When the Internet was first being conceived and built several decades ago, the engineers, in their brilliance, decided
Al Gore,
that,
you mean? By Al Gore?
These were some other folks.
Okay.
They decided in their brilliance that it would be a network that's controlled by users at the very endpoints. That is, people like you and me who go on online have ultimate control over what information we share, what information we see, where we go, what we do on the Internet. It's called the end-to-end principle. And net neutrality preserves that. Net neutrality makes sure that the control over the Internet resides at the endpoints with the people who use it. And it's revolutionary in that it takes traditional models of the media where you usually have a gatekeeper. If you talk about traditional broadcast or cable television or old radio,
right,
you really have programmers and network owners who control the things that the end users see. It's a one-directional medium, whereas the Internet control, the beauty of the Internet is that control resides at the edges with the users who put content onto the Internet read content. And the network, net neutrality makes sure that the network is neutral, that all content can be shared equally across that, and that there are no gatekeepers who say, this content is good, this content is bad, we're going to give priority to this content and not to the other.
Right. So any website.
I hope that was simple enough.
Well, yeah, but I want to expound on that a little bit. So any website you go to, as long as we have this neutral Internet, will load at the same rate. Will you have the same access to, say, HuffingtonPost.com as you do to my blog, RadioOrNot.com, as you do to the NewYorkTimes.com or to MSNBC.com?
Yeah,
right?
And how quickly it loads or not depends really on the end user. Some people buy high-speed connections. Some people use fiber, others have cable or DSL. Other people still have, you know, the traditional dial-up connections, and that's the speed by which they can upload and download things is determined by them. It's not really determined by AT&T or Comcast or Time Warner Cable or some of the big internet service providers. They cannot say, well, oh, this is a person who wants to go to Yahoo. We're going to make that really easy, whereas if this person wants to go to Google or somewhere else, we're going to make that really difficult because Yahoo has paid us a special bounty.
Okay, and so now let me ask. So say I get my internet through my cable provider, which happens to be Comcast. So if we did not have net neutrality, just throwing out hypotheticals here, Yahoo could pay Comcast a handsome fee. And for that, Comcast would be able to provide, say, put Yahoo on the high speed road lane, and Google would go on the lower, the slower speed lane. So it would be much easier for me to access Yahoo and more difficult for me to access Google.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that could happen without net neutrality is you get prioritization like that. There are a lot of controls that they can exert over the network that basically undermine the greatest principle of the Internet, is that it's a level playing field, that you can connect to anyone else on the network without someone telling you yes or no. You can innovate. You can create a new idea and put it on the Internet and have as many people read it as can connect to it. And there's no middle person who says we don't like that idea. They're providing a service that competes with our company. We're going to block all access to that. And so it's for that, you know, it's some of the greatest innovations of the Internet. You know, Google, which is now this massive corporation, was really started by a couple of guys in a dorm room. They had a good idea about search software, and they put it online, and it grew, and other innovations like that all happened from outsiders, and not just business innovations, but political ideas have spread via the Internet. You look at an organization like Move On, which now has millions and millions of people. It really started with two people, you know, sort of working out of their home, who decided to create an email list back in the 1990s around a single issue, because people, you know, followed their idea and thought that, you know, agreed with their politics. It grew and it grew into a very powerful political force that you have today, a very powerful grassroots political force. And the Internet, because it's so decentralized like that, allows for these great ideas to come in from outsiders, from the edges, and flourish and just sort of rise to the top based on their own merits, not because some corporate executive said, you know, I want this idea to work and I don't like any other ones. And so that's what's so revolutionary about it, and net neutrality is the core principle of that.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Since we've been subjected to the fear-mongering of the Republicans when it comes to health care, let me ask you to sort of play devil's advocate here. If we do not get net neutrality, what could happen? Give us a worst-case scenario. What's going to happen to our Internet?
Well, your Internet could be like your cable television, where you're sold tiered packages, and if you can pay more for access to certain websites, but you know, if you get an Internet connection, you won't be guaranteed access to the whole Internet. And it would no longer be the Internet. It would be something akin to cable television, or more akin to AOL, the old style AOL, where they really tried to control the services and applications that you could use. And it would just completely destroy this innovation engine that has been the Internet. So I think people think of this as, well, so what, it's just the Internet, but you know, the Internet right now has become sort of the essential opportunity infrastructure of the 21st century. If you want to get an education, but you're taking care of kids at home, you can go to distance learning sites and do that. If you want to find a job, if you want to start a business, the Internet is increasingly part of the essential infrastructure of our 21st century economy. And if we take away this fundamental openness principle of net neutrality, it has a grave impact on the economy, on issues like healthcare. People are getting a lot of healthcare information over the Internet, on education, civic
everything. I mean, you get everything.
Like
I remember when I was a kid, my parents getting us a set of world book encyclopedias. Those have been made, you know, obsolete by the Internet, because everything is right here. Anytime my daughter, who's 10, asks me a question about something, I say, look it up. Go on the computer and find the answer. It's all there. All right, so on Friday, Congressman Ed Markey of Massachusetts and Anna Eshoo of California introduced a bill that you say could stand as the First Amendment of the Internet age, the Internet Freedom Preservation Act of 2009. And so when we return from the break, I want to find out from you, Tim Carr, what the Internet Freedom Preservation Act of 2009 says. I want to hear your 7 reasons why we need net neutrality now, although I think you already said it. I don't know what more we need, but we'll have you expand on that as well. And if people want to call in, they can do so, 866-303-2270. Tim Carr, campaign director of freepress.net and SaveTheInternet.com, is with us. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
I turn the page, I read the story again and again and again. Sure seems the same.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
And we are back on Air America Radio. The number is 866-303-2270 if you want to get in on this. I'm joined by Timothy Carr. He's the campaign director of Free Press and SaveTheInternet.com and wrote a piece that's on Huffington Post today. It's linked to from my blogs at RadioOrNot.com and the Nicole Sandler Show page at AirAmerica.com. And it's called Seven Reasons Why We Need Net Neutrality Now. And Tim, I think before the break you actually talked about what net neutrality is and why. You know, what our internet would look like if we didn't have it, and I think that alone is enough reason. But what are the other reasons why we need net neutrality now?
Well, I think that increasingly as more people come to use their internet connection for all things media, we've created a new generation of people who are really taking back their media experience. They're empowered with the ability now to create videos that they can put on YouTube that have the potential to be viewed by millions of people. There are network television executives who would drool at that sort of audience, and you could make a video of your cat playing the piano and have an equally sized audience. So it's really revolutionized the media in a number of ways, and it's not just typical media, like that's revolutionized politics, it's revolutionized the way we do business, the way we learn. And so it's really, the internet is really the essential infrastructure of the 21st century. It's essential to have an open internet in order to prosper economically in the United States. It's become essential to free speech and civic participation. And so we're at a point right now where we need to decide whether the future of the internet is going to remain open or whether we're going to allow these powerful gatekeepers, companies like Comcast, AT&T, Time Warner, to take more control back from the internet so that we will lose this openness. And the fear of these large legacy media companies is that they're going to lose control of all media as we go online to watch TV, to listen to radio, to listen to music, to make media, to share media. And so they want to take back this great experiment of an open internet and try to charge us for doing things and limit the sort of things that we can do on the internet. So right now we have a piece of legislation that was introduced last Friday, the Internet Freedom Preservation Act, that codifies net neutrality, the principle that keeps the internet open, so that they can't do that. They can't regain control of the media and take away this great innovation engine. So we're at a really important time where we have to make a decision about an open or closed internet. And in order to make sure to safeguard an open internet, we need to pass this legislation that creates net neutrality as the baseline rule of the road for the internet. So it's really important that people get engaged with this issue right now.
All right. So it was introduced on Friday by Ed Markey and Anna Eshoo. And do we know how many co-sponsors there are? What's it looking like this early on?
Well, it's very early on. It was introduced in the House by Markey and Eshoo on Friday, and then the House broke for its August recess. So.
Right.
We are over the summer recess, we have activists in districts around the country who will be contacting their member of Congress to gather co-sponsors and support for this bill. And when Congress gets back in session in September, we hope to see hearings and to see this bill move through the House Commerce Committee, where both Eshoo and Markey are members, and to get to the floor. We also expect to see a companion bill in the Senate that will move through the Senate. And the good news is that we have in President Obama a very strong and outspoken supporter of net neutrality, so there won't be any resistance to this legislation from the White House. If anything, we expect the White House to help get it through Congress. And we also have in the Federal Communications Commission a new chairman in Julius Genachowski, who is also a pro-net neutrality a pro-net neutrality chairman. So we have the political climate in Washington is right. There's a very popular consensus across the country. This has actually been a very broad movement where more than a million people have gotten involved. There's public will. There's political consensus growing in Washington that we expect to see net neutrality, this net neutrality bill move through Congress and hopefully get passed in this Congress. And bear in mind, we are facing down a very powerful corporate lobby. The AT&T's and the Comcast of the world, the phone and cable lobby, they've hired more than 500 lobbyists and spent tens of millions of dollars.
Right, and therein lies the problem. And again, it always goes back to money. When we talk about the health care reform bills that are out there, and in fact, I'm going to, in the next hour, play excerpts from Keith Olbermann's special comment tonight. The reason I really think that all the blue dogs and the Republicans that are being obstructionists on the health care reform issue, it's not because they don't want health care reform for their constituents. It's because they're owned by the big insurance companies and pharmaceuticals and all the lobbyists who are giving them all that money for their vote. I mean, I don't know why we don't just call it bribery, because that's basically what it is. So the question is, how much money are the AT&Ts and the Comcasts and these 500 lobbyists gonna sprinkle around Capitol Hill, and who are they gonna get to try to do their dirty work?
Well, you know, the phone and cable lobby spends as much money as the insurance and pharmaceutical lobby. They are that powerful in Washington. So if you're looking at the net neutrality issue and you're comparing it to healthcare, the healthcare issue, there's a parallel problem, only you replace the pharmaceutical and insurance lobbyists with the phone and cable lobbyists. It's a very powerful force, and in my opinion, a force that corrupts our democratic process, where special interest money and the way elections are run in this country combine to take a democracy away from people and allow for corrupt legislation, special interest legislation, to get passed while public interest legislation often gets blocked. And so we have the same struggle on the internet side. We do have, as I said, you know, sort of forces in alignment in the White House and elsewhere that hopefully can overcome this very entrenched lobby. But at the same time, you know, it requires also public pressure, which is why Free Press, we have a coalition called the Save the Internet Coalition, which is more than 850 groups, including all of the consumer groups that are fighting for net neutrality. So we're trying our best against this very powerful force to make positive change.
All right. Tim Carr of freepress.net and savetheinternet.com. This is what scares me, because, again, I have to keep bringing it back to the healthcare fight, because we're so entrenched in it right now, and we're seeing how these big dollars and the propaganda they're spreading and the money they're giving our politicians is making people speak out against their own best interests. I mean, who could possibly be against making sure that the citizens of this country get the health care that they deserve as a basic human right? Yet everyday people who can't even afford insurance are out there, for some reason, going to a town hall meeting and screaming at a representative who wants to do just that. So if people are going to, you know, be so dumbed down to not realize that that's against their own best interest, I worry about how they might, you know, react to something as seemingly as innocuous as, oh, it's just the internet. You know, it's no big deal. We can let the big companies have a faster bandwidth or whatever. That's what frightens me.
Well, one of the mantras that we've used in the internet campaign is you've got to use the internet to save the internet. Mm-hmm. But it's actually true for any issue, whether you're an environmentalist or you care about health care or reproductive rights or whatever your issue is, whatever your biggest political concern is. You need the internet to have a voice. The internet is increasingly giving voice to people who are outside of the Beltway, who don't know how to play the game that lobbyists and politicians engage in on a day-to-day basis. It gives them access to send emails, to contact their members of Congress, to learn more about an issue. And if we take away the openness of the internet, the ability for anybody to go online and pursue the issue that they care about, to find information, to share information, if we take away that fundamental openness, there is an amazing political loss that's suffered by the grassroots and the netroots in this country. So it's important on every front.
I got you. Now let me ask you this, Tim Carr, and it is related. It's not necessarily about net neutrality, but it's definitely related. Two stories I heard this week. One is that there might be a problem with Skype, that they're talking Skype might have to be shut down.
Yes, Skype is owned by eBay, and so there are some issues that they're going to close down Skype. Skype has a number of other problems, too. AT&T, which is in alliance with Apple on the iPhone, has blocked Skype as a tool, as a application that you can use on the new iPhone 3G network. So, you know, there are a lot of these startups that are offering these types of online innovations. Skype, of course, allows you to make long-distance phone calls via your internet connection. There are others that are out that are offering similar services that have run into troubles. And it's not so much because it's a bad idea, it's because in the case of the blocking by AT&T and the iPhone is that they feel that this new innovative technology is competitive to AT&T's traditional business, which, of course, is long-distance phone calls. And so they've blocked it, and they've tried to stifle this upstart. And this is the kind of, you know, when you talk about a free market, what you really talk about, in my view, is the freedom for new ideas to percolate up and proliferate, and for the old legacy business models to get challenged, and if, you know, something better comes along, for them, you know, to get beaten. And the problem that we see now is that the corporations have become so powerful that they've protected their fiefdoms through legislation. They pass laws that actually stop new innovations from percolating up, and they lock in their virtual monopoly over the business sector. AT&T has a virtual monopoly and had a real monopoly at one point over a lot of phone and telephone and internet connectivity in certain markets.
So the whole reason behind that Skype is having problems right now is because of AT&T?
No, I mean there are financial issues with its owner at eBay, but they have been having problems getting their application out to users because AT&T has been blocking it on networks.
Wow.
When you look at the internet service providers out there, you're looking at companies like AT&T and Verizon and Comcast. They're also in the business of providing telephone services.
That's right.
And Skype relies upon an internet connection to survive. And if you allow these conglomerated media companies that provide you with your wireless, your cable, your internet, your telephone to have ultimate control of their networks, they're going to block out these competitors and they're going to lock in their monopolies. So,
wow.
Yes, Skype suffers from that.
I use Skype on a daily basis here at home. When I record interviews from my home studio, I do it on Skype, and it's crystal clear and very, very inexpensive. I do the Skype out so I can call landlines and cell phones with it, and that's really distressing. The other one, and you know what, we got to take a break here. So, but I'll throw it out, and then we'll take a break and come back, and you can answer the question, which is Google Voice, which AT&T and the iPhone are trying to block as well, or they have blocked it from the iPhone. And I want to find, because I got Google Voice, I'm not quite sure what I can do with it. Maybe it'll replace Skype if Skype goes away, but maybe AT&T and the cable companies and telephone companies will be successful in blocking that too. We'll find out when we return. Tim Carr is with us. He is the campaign director for Free Press and SaveTheInternet.com, and we'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
And we are back with Tim Carr of freepress.net and savetheinternet.com. And so, Tim, all right, before the break, we were talking about Skype and the sort of tenuous ground they're treading on. Now, what about Google Talk? This is a new thing. I just got an invitation to it, and I can see the problems there, and I could see why Apple might not want people to use it on their iPhone. What does Google Voice do that they're so afraid of?
Well, Google Voice is sort of like Skype on steroids. It's a similar voice over the internet protocol, which allows you to manage your phone number and your messages and your outgoing and incoming phone calls via a high-speed internet connection. So the idea with the iPhone, with what's so been so revolutionary about the iPhone and what Steve Jobs called it when he introduced it to the millions, was that it's the internet in your pocket. So just like the internet that you experience via your desktop or your laptop computer, you should be able to go online and download any application that's on the internet. But the problem is that AT&T and Apple aren't actually letting you do that. So it isn't really the true internet. It certainly isn't the open internet. And what they've done, a decision that came down late last month, is they've decided to block Google Voice. And it's created a stir because here we have an issue that's related to net neutrality about consumer choice over their internet connection that is now applied to the wireless space, to the mobile phone space, because more and more mobile phones are becoming internet enabled, and yet the carriers that control mobile phones, there are four dominant carriers in the United States that control 90% of the market, don't want to give you the sort of internet freedoms that you might expect on your laptop when you go on to using your mobile phone.
So with Google Voice, if I have it installed on my cell phone, which I do, now if I make a call through Google Voice, does it not use my phone minutes that I pay T-Mobile for?
It uses your connection minutes, but it allows you to have your own phone number provided by Google.
That number. They're not calling my cell phone number, and with a cell phone, you get charged for incoming calls as well.
Yeah, and it's really taken the model that carriers have operated on, and it's turned it on its ear. And so when AT&T and Apple decided to block Google Voice, it raised quite a few eyebrows. And one very important eyebrow that was raised was the eyebrow of the FCC chairman, Julius Genachowski, and he's tasked his wireless bureau at the FCC to put forth an inquiry and to investigate the blocking of Google Voice. So on Friday, the FCC sent out a series of questions to AT&T and Apple, which have the exclusive agreement over the iPhone, and to Google to try to get to the bottom of the issue and to see whether or not the blocking of new applications via wireless internet networks, such as the ones used by iPhone, is a violation of some basic principles of openness on the internet, whether it's anti-competitive to a degree that would warrant some government action.
It is fascinating, and this is the kind of stuff you deal with at freepress.net, right?
That's right. We're very much engaged into getting the public engaged with these sorts of issues. Communications policy can be very technical. It can be very wonky. And it could be a real difficult area for people to sort of, you know, manage and understand. And Free Press is devoted to bringing these issues before the public because we think that the media is such a fundamental part of a functioning democracy. And if we don't have an open and accessible and accountable media system in this country, our democracy is under threat. So the key to better media is better public engagement in a process that's been dominated by these special interest lobbyists for too long.
Right, and especially now when there's so much changing. I mean, all this new technology that didn't exist even 10 years ago, it's so rapidly changing that, the people that are, they have a vested interest in seeing some of the new technology fail also have big dollars to put towards making sure that the new technology fails. And for instance, Google Voice on your iPhone. I have the Google phone, so I'm hoping that it'll work just fine on this thing. Anyway, Tim Carr of freepress.net and savetheinternet.com, it's always a pleasure talking with you. We'll stay on top of this net neutrality issue because I think it is one of the most important issues of the day. So thank you for informing us, and I've got a link to your article on radioornot.com, and we'll talk again soon. Thank you. On the other side, we will deal with the healthcare issue, Keith Olbermann's new special comment, and disruptors at town hall meetings. Don't go away.